Welcome to The Medium, a podcast presented by Tommy Media that's all about what's happening in the art and entertainment world. On today's show, we will talk with St. Thomasoon Allison Barsh about Ballroom Dance Club. We will also be discussing overextended TV shows and film sequels, and catching up with the latest news in arts and entertainment.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from KUST Campus Radio. A student-operated, non-commercial radio, KUST provides students and faculty of St. Thomas a platform dedicated to creative storytelling, diverse viewpoints, and exploring a vast array of audio content. Tune in at any time to KUST at mixler.com/KUST-radio.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Maddie Peters, and I'm here with my co-host, Reed. How's it going, Reed?
It's going great. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, of course. So we're going to start off with Allison Barsh, who is a junior at St. Thomas, and she's also the communications coordinator for Ballroom Dance Club. Allison, how's it going?
I'm good, Maddie.
Good. Thanks for coming in. So we just have a couple questions about the club itself, but then also just about ballroom dance in general. So I guess we'll just start off with kind of what is ballroom dance? What do you guys do there?
Yeah, so basically the point of the club is to give us an opportunity to ballroom dance. It's just like a bunch of students that have an interest or have danced before or haven't danced before that just think it sounds fun, and we get together and we learn how to dance and we practice dancing.
Now, as someone who's not gifted with his feet and is not coordinated, I can't dance.
I think that point was made.
Yes. Could you kind of describe the difference between ballroom dancing and, I don't know, general dancing? Like what differs?
Yeah, so ballroom dancing is kind of like a genre of dance, I would say, like how there's different genres of music.
Okay.
So all like different forms of dance have like different rules. So like there's like hip hop dancing and jazz dancing that have like different steps and like moves that you could do that make it the dance that it is. So ballroom dancing follows somewhat of a strict form sort of, but there are also subcategories of dances that fall into the ballroom category.
Okay, could you list off a couple of those categories?
Yeah, sure. So ballroom dancing has smooth and Latin dances, and the smooth dances are the foxtrot, the waltz, the tango, and the Viennese waltz, and Latin dances include things like salsa, cha-cha, rumba, bolero.
Those sort of things. Nice.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay.
What are the main differences between smooth dances and Latin dances?
A lot of it is how it's danced, like, in a setting, like... For example, like the smooth ballroom dances are much like wider. They take up a lot more space. They're meant to travel across the floor. So those ones, you have a really wide frame. You take really large steps. Those can be more performative than some of the other ones. Some of the Latin dances are often called like club dancing, especially like club salsa is pretty popular. Those ones you are like kind of tighter with your partner and you don't really like move around the floor as much.
Latin dances to me usually seem faster, or maybe not faster, but
more energetic.
Yeah,
maybe.
Latin dancing is on the spot. It looks more on the spot.
Yes, yeah. Latin dancing is also called like rhythm dancing. It's more about the rhythm than like the flow, in like just in terms of how it feels.
Definitely. So then, in ballroom dance club, do you guys teach all of them, or how do you go about, I guess, picking which dances to choose?
Yeah, so those six core dances that I talked about, the waltz, tango, foxtrot, salsa, cha-cha, rumba, those are the ones that we teach in ballroom dancing. And then we do sometimes have days where we'll go out and learn a different dance just for one time. But those six are the ones that we rotate through and really try to get a good foundation in. We teach beginner and intermediate level, and we just kind of like foster a growth of dance.
Nice. Who usually teaches it? The students who are more experienced, or do you guys bring in instructors or anything?
So our beginner class, starting this semester, we've actually implemented a new program where it is student taught. So our board, we have a rookie coordinator, and he teaches the beginner class. So he's the teacher for that class. So it's student-led, student-learned, basically. But our intermediate class, we bring in a professional dance instructor from a ballroom studio in the Twin Cities area who teaches professionally, dances competitively, and he comes in and he teaches us his routines.
That's pretty cool.
That is cool.
Yeah, he's awesome.
I don't know, having the opportunity to have like a professional anything come in and help teach you just for the sake of a club is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Like that was an excellent opportunity.
Mm-hmm. How did he get involved in it?
So actually the German professor, Dr. Wagner, loves ballroom dancing, and she like curated this club. She like made this club because of her love for ballroom dance. And so she was actually taking like private lessons at the studio. Nice. And worked with the ballroom studio to bring in a professional instructor for the students.
Oh, that's really nice. Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Does Ballroom Dance Club do any events or performances outside of just your meetings?
So we've, in like the past year or so, we've kind of teamed up with the Pulse Club, and we have like a showcase at their showcase where we'll come and perform a ballroom routine with the other student group performers. Otherwise, we like kind of also team up with the studio. It's called Cinema Ballroom. It's a few blocks away. And they have a lot of social dances that, because of our participation in the club with that instructor, we get to go to for free.
Fun.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. So, yeah, you have that opportunity to branch out into, I don't know, non-student.
Exactly. So if we go to the like those cinema events, it's an opportunity to like be a part of like the St. Paul ballroom community. And mm-hmm. there's a lot of like older adults that like take lessons there that are dancing with us, and it's really cool to be able to dance with more experienced people. It makes you a lot better dancer.
Definitely. Are there any dances that you prefer to teach or dance? Like, what are your favorites?
Yeah.
My favorite dance is probably the tango, but I also love bolero. We don't usually do bolero in ballroom, but it's like a Latin dance that has a lot of elements of smooth to it, so you kind of get the best of both worlds with it. I really like it. Tango is also very expressive. In general, I prefer the smooth dances. So.
Nice.
And then could you tell us when this club meets and where, so, you know, potential listeners, they feel like, I don't know, dancing?
They yeah, absolutely.
They want to put on their dancing shoes.
I was trying to come up with something like fun.
Kind of cute. Like,
yeah, ooh. But I'm like, for students who want to dance.
Yeah, absolutely. So our beginner class for people that don't have any ballroom experience is on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. in ASC Dance. And so that we do a smooth dance and a Latin dance every night. And then we've got some time for social dancing just to practice what we've learned. And then our intermediate class for people that have ballroom experience, whether or not that's with the club, that meets on Sunday nights at 6 p.m. in McCarthy Gym.
Very nice. Well, mm-hmm. I do have one final question.
Yes.
I'm not sure if it's relevant or not. I think it's very relevant. Do you watch Dancing with the Stars?
I have just started watching it this season.
Nice.
My roommates are super into it. We especially love Pasha. So
Pasha?
Also very important question. Mm-hmm. Does this influence your ballroom dance routines?
Ooh. Do you like take moves that you think are cool or try
also,
moves?
Also, do you have three judges in the club now?
Len Goodman.
Yeah.
Okay, we don't have judges in the club, and we also don't choreograph our own routines. But we do. One thing that's really cool about watching Dancing with the Stars now that I've started is I recognize a lot of the moves that they do, and I think this season the judges have been starting to be particular about they want it to be like real dancing, mm-hmm. like they want to keep it in the style that they're trying to do. And then they comment on that, like, how they're in frame really well or they're doing certain steps. And I'm like, yeah, I know how to do those steps. And, mm-hmm. like, that's because of what I've learned through Ballroom Dance Club.
Yeah, I've watched the show pretty on and off just in my lifetime in general. And this season, they are being more critical, I think, and, like, focusing on having the right steps in the right dances. But I think that's cool as an audience or viewer. No, I'm not in the audience. As a viewer at home, being able to see the correct dances. And then I'm sure with you, who actually learned some of these, mm-hmm. like you said, that you can recognize them in there.
Yeah, I like that it goes back to the core of, like, what ballroom dancing is. Like, all of the flashy dancing, like, lifts and things, those are cool and, like, fun to do and see. But it's not really what's at the heart of ballroom dancing. And the thing is, ballroom dancing is still, like, a beautiful expression.
Sure.
And so you don't have to make it flashy for it to be performative.
Nice. Reed, you got anything else, or...?
I can't dance.
You can't dance.
It's come bad. To beginner. We're here to teach you.
I might have to do that. It's like I want to dance, you know, mm-hmm. but
it's literally the point of the club.
You're like
my body won't let me.
You're like the friend in Footloose who has no rhythm, and then Kevin Bacon has to teach him. But then by the end, he's a great dancer.
Because
I need
practices.
A Kevin Bacon in my life.
All right, everyone,
Ballroom
look for Kevin Bacon for Reed, and he'll get to dancing. Well, Allison, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And everyone, go check out Ballroom Dance Club. All right, well, that was a good interview with Allison. I just want to interject. Hannah Brown is killing it. Not saying that I watched The Bachelorette or anything, but I totally did, and she's doing great.
I'm going to pretend like I understand the reference.
Good. Okay, we're going to move into our discussion for this week's podcast. It is specifically looking at TV shows and movies, franchises really, that are overstaying their welcome, meaning too many sequels or shows that just drag on too much.
Let's set the stage a little bit. Now you're watching a really good show. Maybe it's Friends, The Office, or you really like the original Transformers movies.
Oof.
And then they keep the studio, the company, whatever owns the franchise or that copyright, they just keep plugging away at it. They keep adding seasons, and suddenly we have two seasons of Andy Bernard as a manager in The Office, and then we have...
Without Michael Scott.
I get really heated about that. And then just absolute trash Transformers movies, mm-hmm. and infinite reboots of movies that were created, what, in the 80s? At Jurassic Park, at Terminator.
Yep.
And I guess... I believe I was the one who came up with this topic.
Yeah.
I was wondering why.
I mean, honestly, it's a good starter question.
Yeah, I mean, why does this happen? Because everyone has that franchise, that series, that movie that just went a little too far,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's so rare to see a movie series or a movie just wrap up perfectly.
Yeah.
And when it does, you still kind of want more, but
sure.
you almost know that more will ruin it.
Yeah, well, I'll bring it back to last episode. We were playing some Supernatural trivia,
right.
for the premiere. Premiere was great, right, by the way. But as a fan of that show, I can honestly say it went on too long. Or at least that in the middle, there were some pretty weak seasons where they don't benefit the show in any way. And of course, I love where it's at now, but if they had stuck to the original 5-season plan, it would have been a show with a clean start, clean finish, solid story all the way through. But the reason that it's prolonged, I think, is because of the fans of that show. They're very dedicated fans. But at the same time, if you're not going to give the best content possible, is it worth doing that? I would rather have a show that I love start and end strong than dip or peter out or, I don't know, just keep going without any true reason to.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know the show Supernatural, it's a show that originally premiered on a different network before WB network, before it turned into the CW network.
Correct.
Which indicates how long it's been around. It's been around for 15 years. This is its 15th season.
Correct.
It is the longest running sci-fi live action show ever. And for those of you who don't know the premise, it's about two brothers who fight the supernatural elements of the world. And without getting into too much spoilers, I believe the first 5 seasons or so was this story arc where the brothers are virtually going up against the devil.
Yeah.
That was building up to this conclusion that they would end up defeating the devil.
Right.
And after season 5, lo and behold, they wrap up that story arc and they still had, I don't know, fans, the opportunity to make money.
Absolutely. At that point, the show had garnered enough support from the network and fans that it was able to keep going. And I know Eric Kripke, who originally created the show, was still on board in season 6, but after that, I believe he dropped off. And part of that is because his original vision of the show was 5 seasons. And if you've watched those first 5 seasons, you know the arc is very gradual, but it builds to this kind of epic season 5 finale that's known as one of the best episodes that the show has. But then season 6 is kind of a downturn because it's how do you come back after a season like that?
Right. And both of us have seen Supernatural, and we both like it, and we both agree, and I think the majority of fans agree, that there is that dip in quality after the original storyline
mm-hmm.
concludes. And we're kind of using this as an example of all these different shows that truly just overstay their welcome. They have enough support from the fans. The studio has enough opportunity to continue to make money that they continue to make the show or continue to make sequels in the case of movies.
Mm-hmm.
And when studios do that too often, it seems to greatly depreciate the quality of that
that franchise.
Definitely.
And once you do that, you start losing, well, first of all, you start losing fans, then you start losing money, and then once those two are gone, the studio scraps the franchise altogether or reboots it and just totally kind of blows up whatever sort of fandom there was.
Yeah. Well, oftentimes when the money runs out and support starts to run out, then that's when shows get canceled, and then they get to leave on an even worse note because they don't have time to wrap it up, or it just... And, yeah, they're left in a bad spot, and it just makes it worse.
Yeah, ends with a really cruddy, like, I was going to say hangover, but no. That's what it feels like after them. A really cruddy cliffhanger.
Yeah,
it's where it's, when you see that at the end of a, at the end of a series, you kind of know what happened, you know? It's the studio cut it, and the, I don't know, the writers were hoping to get another season.
Yeah, and then just didn't fall through. I like, though, you mentioned Jurassic Park as a series. I think we can talk about that in two ways. One, the original trilogy of movies. The first movie is undoubtedly classic.
Amazing
great movie.
Yeah.
I would argue that the second and third Jurassic Park movies didn't need to happen. But then I would also argue that the two Jurassic World movies didn't need to happen.
Oh,
so that series
for
got
sure.
That series, excuse me, got revamped kind of in both aspects of what we're talking here. It got two unnecessary sequels after the original came out, but now it's been brought back
after after beating that horse of that's the term, right?
Yeah, don't beat a dead horse.
Don't beat a dead after beating that dead horse. From the original movie, they're like, you know, let's just basically start over, do a soft reboot, get Chris Pratt in there. Hopefully his handsome mug will bring in more audience. And then we got the Jurassic Worlds movie, which virtually the same thing as the first two movies, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Right. So
just larger scale. Again, like you said, they had Chris Pratt and they had bigger budget and there was a lot of hype around it because they knew what they were building on with the first one.
Exactly. And this is, I don't know, we're discussing this pattern, I guess, and I just, it's so irritating. It's almost insulting as a fan of anything if that happens to your favorite franchise.
Sure.
And it's like, how dumb or gullible do these studios think we are? I'm sounding really, really negative, but
no,
like,
go for it though.
It's like, how far am I willing to go as a fan to continue to support a franchise that continues to worsen in quality because the studio just wants to keep making that money that the original product produced?
I think the money is very telling because both Jurassic World 1 and 2 did incredibly well despite not getting good reviews, not being sure it might be fun and like nice but nostalgia factor, but
thin story plot.
Yeah, not the greatest movie in the world. Definitely, I don't think deserving of the revenue that it brought in.
Right. So, I mean, why that revenue? Is it simply because of name recognition? You know,
could be getting big actors in there definitely helps.
Definitely helps. Yeah. So again, name recognition with actors. Well, let's go through. Let's go back to Supernatural, I guess.
Yeah.
Because this is a prime example. For several seasons after the original story arc ended, they struggled to find something intriguing, interesting, and the quality dipped horribly from, what do you think, season six through?
Six and seven were rough. Eight wasn't bad. I wouldn't even say nine was that bad. But, like, eight through 12 were kind of shaky. They were better. They were getting better.
Right.
But then now 13 through 15 is pretty good.
They're refining their foothold, so to speak.
But that's also like 6 years of.
Yeah, they had a lot of time.
When you say it like, oh, I can just watch five seasons on Netflix in however many days or months, that's not that bad. But when you realize that's 6 years of this show.
They spent 6 years trying to figure that out.
Right.
And yeah, Let's kind of skip. We wrote out some questions or some talking points. Let's skip to the fandom part.
Yes.
Because I think that's what's driving this.
Absolutely.
It's almost a guarantee that a studio will make money off of a movie that has a recognizable title, a title from some sort of recognizable franchise, Transformers, Jurassic Park, virtually any Marvel movie now. That's why we keep getting Iron Man 3, Captain America Civil War, which is the third one, Thor 3, whatever.
They just keep coming back.
Yeah, they keep bringing back recognizable characters instead of creating new ones. And it's a desperate attempt to make that original just as appealing. They when a movie company strikes gold with this original movie, it's like a desperate attempt to recreate that formula that they originally had. And they think to do that, it's basically copying and pasting that original movie and adding a two to the title. Which I think kind of cheapens the movie industry quite a bit.
I think so. Well, my biggest thing is I'm always like, if you have something that's good, like its first go around doesn't need to be changed or added to, leave it. And I don't think people can leave it alone. And so, for example, something that's going to be coming out, they have already finished filming A Quiet Place 2. And the first Quiet Place movie is phenomenal. It ends on kind of a cliffhanger, but you could leave it at that and be done with it. And not saying that I don't trust John Krasinski to make a wonderful second movie, but it begs the question of, was that necessary? And obviously we'll have to see when it comes out, but did you have to further it? I don't think he had to.
No, I would agree. That was a tight plot. I think the fact that it was only like a 90-minute movie shows that. Yeah, and it was a good movie for that, and I think it got enough recognition and made enough money. It didn't cost that much money, and everyone saw it, or a lot of people saw it. So the studio thought, you know what, maybe we should do that again, increase the budget a little more, and then
and build on the people who already saw it who would want to go see a second one.
Yeah.
Like, and that's a natural response, but...
Yeah, and then maybe even draw people to watch the first one for the first time.
Sure.
And then just because... Now The Quiet Place is this big property. It's this big franchise. I struggle with this because I'm a fanboy at heart, truly.
I think, me too. Yeah, don't worry.
And there are certain properties that I go to the midnight showing of just about every Marvel movie. I saw Endgame at the first showing possible. Amazing, by the way. And
throwback.
And I will probably continue to do that with at least several movies. Sure. I'll be first in line for Matt Reeves' Batman movie.
Yes.
They just announced Catwoman, Zoe Kravitz, or whatever. Kravitz.
Oh, that's Kravitz.
Yeah, Zoe Kravitz. Interested. Sorry, little tangent there. I'm excited. Did I mention I was excited? Anyways.
One more time, please.
I'm excited. And... I totally forgot where I was going.
I don't know.
Anyways, yeah, I'll be in
line. Again, you're a fan, and so that's going to build... Well, even outside of the film world, The Hunger Games is getting a fourth book coming out next year. I think it's a prequel to the trilogy, but again, I'm like, okay, why? Why? But then this book already has movie rights sold to the company that made the original four movies. And part of me, I'm like... You had a great trilogy, a great set of movies. Leave it at that.
Oh, great.
Will I go? Will I go read it? Of course, I'll read it. But I don't know if it's necessary.
Yeah, no, it's definitely just profiting off of.
Yeah.
That is a perfect.
It's going to resurge this story that was from like 10 years ago now.
You know what? Big proclamation.
Do it.
Any prequel is a cash grab.
Got him. Hot takes.
Prequels are cash grabs.
Kind of agree.
At George Lucas. Oof. And
got him again.
Usually in the original movie, they describe what happened in the past enough to where you don't need to see that. I do not need to see Han Solo, okay? We understand how he got there. It doesn't matter, okay? Yeah. We don't need to see... Every prequel book I've read, I dislike because I'm like, we've discussed this and you're just redoing it in detail to make money. And it's so frustrating. I'm sad right now.
Aw, Dream. Don't be sad.
And then, God, yeah, I mean, the Star Wars prequels.
Well, even the Star Wars ones that are coming out now, to be honest, I haven't seen most of them. I've seen the original trilogy of movies.
As you should.
Right. But, and I have seen then the three prequels, if you call them that. But the ones since then, I think I've seen maybe The Force Awakens, but the other ones, not much. But then there's even like shows coming out now too, and
Star Wars is a beautiful other things. Example of this topic.
And not saying that it's bad, but why?
It's money.
Money. Why?
The last several Star Wars movies broke $1 billion.
Right, right.
Like, literally, like, I think the top 10 grossing films of all time, I think there's two or three Star Wars films on there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, they make money. It's yeah. It's almost worth, like, damaging that brand equity, that the brand, the quality of the brand mm-hmm. to make that money, because it's billions of dollars we're talking about, you
right.
know?
Right. And not saying that every single piece of content that comes out of Hollywood or the TV industry has to be this groundbreaking thing.
Yeah.
But you wish that this effort was going towards content.
It's an easy route to take.
Yeah.
It's almost a guaranteed profit.
Right.
But it depreciates over time.
Right.
You keep making sequels until suddenly you're making a loss.
Because obviously, if there's like a plan to have a 7-story movie or a 12-season show,
you gotta do it.
Go
yeah.
for it. But if that's part of the plan and it's not just, let's just drag it out until it's gone.
There's nothing wrong with continuing a story.
No,
if it's meant to be continued.
Right.
Again, looking back at The Quiet Place, where mm-hmm. the story pretty much wrapped up nicely. It was a little bit ambiguous ending, but
there was a cliffhanger where I guess you could keep it going. But that'll be the question. Do they pick it up exactly where it left off, or will they jump ahead in time? I don't know. But when that comes out, depending on how it goes, maybe that's a story that is okay to continue going forward, or at least putting another installment in there. But I think that's something that creators should think of more critically.
Yeah.
But again, it goes back to, well, they're going to make money off of it, or maybe the fans want it, but
I don't know. I guess it's kind of goes to that any artistic form. I think we talked about this when we had Grace on the show a couple episodes ago,
mm-hmm.
where with any art form, once you get that foothold in the industry or that credibility in the industry, you have two routes to take. Continue to produce artistic content, original content, or take the easy route.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, this easy route is building easy, shallow stories off of stories that have already been made.
Right. Stories that were original when they first came out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think, because there's certainly filmmakers out there who avoid going into those big franchises because they understand that it kind of discredits them a little bit. Because first of all, the studios do a lot of the work, like,
mm-hmm.
Again, Marvel. I'm sorry, guys. But
like he said, he's a fanboy.
I'm a fanboy.
Specifically Marvel.
DC too, but Suicide Squad sucked.
Ooh, yeah, hot takes,
hot
Reed.
Take. That was not a hot take. That's probably not a fact. that was a
not
fact.
Opinion.
No, but like Marvel famously has, they like these executive producers, this huge corporation has their fingers in all these movies to mm-hmm. where the directors are basically not directing. They're
sure.
following this formula. They're doing as the company says, and basically they get their name attached.
Yeah.
And I think that's how you get a little discredited. It's like the easy route, you get paid, you get a big paycheck, especially from a company like Disney, but you virtually don't get to make the movie.
Right.
Your input is minimal. It's there, but it's minimal.
Right.
So yeah, I guess it's the easy route. Easy route. I don't know. I want to know what are some movies or TV shows other than Supernatural
mm-hmm.
that you think that you have a connection to, that you're a fan of, that you know it's continued when it probably shouldn't have continued?
Let's
toss out a few.
Yeah. No, I'm trying to think. There weren't many. I'm trying to think of shows that weren't necessarily like reality shows versus actual like written shows.
I guess reality shows.
Because even reality shows can go on far too long. First thing that comes to my mind is Dance Moms. That show was absurd. I loved it, but it was like,
eventually, isn't it like just, the same thing over and
yeah,
over and
it was
over again?
Too far. And then even game shows, kind of like Survivor. Again, I adore that show. I love it. But some seasons, you're like, you're kind of stretching for new ideas. But people keep wanting to play, and people keep watching it. So I guess you keep doing it. But scripted shows, I don't know. I don't really keep up with that many, I guess.
I could name a few.
Go for it.
I want to name a few. All right. One, The Office, we talked about already. Andy Bernard, really, he stunk.
Should have ended with Michael Scott being there.
Should have ended with Michael Scott leaving.
Yes.
That would have been a perfect ending, bittersweet, perfect.
Definitely.
How I Met Your Mother, I don't know if you've seen that.
I have not seen it.
Great show.
I heard the ending was questionable.
The ending is very questionable. The last season is questionable. The entire season takes place in that universe, a span of 48 hours, which is weird.
Oh.
Yeah, it's weird.
Okay.
Or 72, like 3 days, I think. It's weird. And the quality dips dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. It's Fantastic Beasts.
Movies?
I love Harry Potter so much. And I was very disheartened to learn that they were making prequels because, as I said before, prequels are basically just cash grabs.
Well, I think those are interesting, though, because they're prequels in the sense that they're in that world, but they aren't directly Harry's story. Obviously, he's involved, and it is characters that we know from
Dumbledore
the other movies.
In the
I know. Well, that's what I'm
saying.
Like, there are characters that are relevant later on, but they are different, and they're set in America, I think. I haven't seen the second
one. You think it's different enough to where it's appropriate?
So, like, I think it's different enough.
I'll take that.
And Eddie Redmayne is adorable, so that's fine.
I like him as an actor.
I do, too. I think he's great.
I have a friend who says he doesn't like him. I'm like, he's an excellent actor.
How can you not? He's so good.
He's got range, too.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Yeah.
Anyway, Eddie Redmayne aside, I think those are fine. I think the more questionable Harry Potter thing is The Cursed Child, which was a play that came out.
Yeah, that was a little... Apparently it's good. It's hard to judge.
I've heard the play version is better than the book, but there are aspects to it that contradict the original story. Or, like, they're just not perfectly lined up with the world she already created.
All right. Well,
but I don't know how to really end this, because I feel like it's kind of...
This is an ongoing... Okay,
there's so many examples we could come up with.
Yeah, seriously. I guess let me end this with a question. Do you think this will ever stop? Mm-hmm. How do you think this might change? Because content gets created and discarded so quickly,
mm-hmm.
original content.
Mm-hmm.
And people are getting tired of, say what you will about Star Wars, it's amazing, but the last several movies have been questionable, and they're really stretching their luck with these interesting shows. And that... continues. Marvel is strong right now, but it's just hit its peak.
Where is it going to go from here?
Where is it going to go from there? And mm-hmm. everyone's like, oh, it's going to go down.
Sure.
So I guess, where do you see this trend ending up? Do you see people getting tired of that and looking for original content, flat out abandoning franchises, or is that love so deep-rooted that they'll stick through even the cruddiest movies?
As a short answer, I think viewers are getting smarter in requesting better content, given that there's more content everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think true fan people are ride or die. And I can say that just from watching Supernatural, ride or die. But so, yeah, I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to watch, maybe with like the Marvel series or a couple, like even the Star Wars franchise, see where those go and see if any original content that's coming out now is going to get re-picked up, sort of thing. So I guess it'll be something you have to look at as viewers kind of change their opinion on that, if they do. I don't know, but so I guess we'll see.
We'll see in the far, far future.
In a galaxy far, far away. Oh, goodness.
Yeah. It just reminded me of, real quick, just to reemphasize this entire thing.
Hit it again. Give us another hot take, Reed.
The Star Wars universe is a big universe, everyone. Why are we focusing on one family? Enough of the Skywalkers. I mean, yay, they're
old
good.
News.
They're old news. We have a whole universe to exploit. That's just a prime example. it's recognizable. That's why we're there. Rise of Skywalker, more like just end the Skywalkers, okay?
Ooh, and with that hot take, we're going to end this portion of the show. And we're going to move into now our latest news section. I'll just hop right into it. So Leigh Bardugo's best-selling young adult book series, Shadow and Bone, and its counterpart duology, Six of Crows, is being adapted into a Netflix show, which I'm unbelievably excited for.
Could you real quick just explain what this book series is? Just a brief...
I'll explain kind of the world, because they both take place in the same world, even though they're a few years apart, but it's just a world that's divided into non-magic people and magic people who are called Grisha, and they can move, like, elements in the world, whether that's anatomical, like blood, that sort of thing, or minerals, just... Anyway, they have powers. And the Shadow and Bone series focuses on Alina Starkov, who will be played by Jessie Mae Lee, and she's trying to help her country that's slowly being taken over by the Darkling. And he will be played by Ben Barnes, who's from the Punisher series.
Great actor.
There you go. Hype it up. And so it's kind of their war of saving her country, but then her also not wanting to fully give in to her magic abilities that she discovers, but then realizing that she has an opportunity to do so. And then Six of Crows is about this group of six teenagers led by Kaz Brekker, who will be played by Freddie Carter, which I'm also excited for. And they basically go on a bunch of heists, and it's all about their backstories. I love Six of Crows. It's one of my favorite books. But yeah, so it's just kind of this like really developed world that these that Netflix is going to get to play with, essentially, which is awesome. And production is underway, and it's set to release in 2020. But also, a side note, Bardugo's highly anticipated first adult fantasy novel, Ninth House, released last week. And that novel has already been picked up by Amazon to be made into a show. So Leigh Bardugo has got it going on with adaptations right now.
You know, we could have a whole show on how books are being adapted into movies.
Mm-hmm.
They're virtually being, books are being written as scripts for movies and stuff. We could have a whole...
We should have a show about that.
Yeah.
I will go off. That'll be my turn to give hot takes.
Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings was the catalyst for that. Let me end it with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, moving on.
Moving on. So, Aaron Paul returns in the Breaking Bad universe as Jesse Pinkman in El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie, a cinematic follow-up to the groundbreaking show Breaking Bad. After a six-year hiatus, director and creator Vince Gilligan returns to wrap up Jesse Pinkman's story following the events in the series finale. The story returned to favorable reviews and a lot of hype.
And hype, indeed. I am so excited.
Have you not seen it yet?
No, I haven't watched it.
Oh my gosh, it's good. It's,
I'm very excited.
It's a very, if you were a fan of Breaking Bad, it is a solid follow-up and a solid ending to Jesse's story.
Good.
Because the finale, the series finale, was really Walt's goodbye. And
definitely.
Now this is Jesse's goodbye.
Does Walt, is Walt discussed at all in the movie or no?
Oh, well, yeah, he's definitely discussed.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's still in that universe. It's a Breaking Bad story, so yeah, he's discussed.
Okay, because I have a hot take, and that is that Walt did not die on the ground.
You're going to have to watch the movie to find out.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I have to go watch the movie as soon as we're done recording this. Just saying. Our third bit of news is that Shakira and Jennifer Lopez are currently slated to perform at the 2020 Super Bowl halftime show. The NFL is celebrating its 100th anniversary, so expectations are high for the performance. It will be both artists' first time performing at the Super Bowl.
Very exciting. Let's see. And our final bit of news. Yep, final bit. Kind of a weird controversy. So Oscar-winning actor, or excuse me, Oscar-winning director. He's also an Oscar. He's also an actor, but not Oscar-winning actor. Let me start over. Oscar-winning director Martin Scorsese is in the spotlight recently after an interview with Empire, where he criticized the Marvel Cinematic Universe for not being real cinema. After praising the actors of the films, Scorsese reflected that popular superhero movies are more comparable to carnival rides, to theme park rides. These comments drew criticism as well as deep analysis of formulaic movies such as those of the MCU. We kind of discussed this a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
This is what he said after being asked if he watches the Marvel movies. He said, and I quote, "I don't see them. I tried, you know? But that's not cinema," Scorsese told Empire.
quote, honestly, the closest I can think of them, as well made as they are, with actors doing the best they can under the circumstances, is theme parks. It isn't the cinema of human beings trying to convey emotional psychological experiences to another human being. This is drew, like I said, drew criticism from all over since the Marvel Universe is very popular. However, someone of this caliber and credibility does make a point that we should be questioning the quality of movies like this, which are so heavily reliant on studio involvement and formulas. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of an interesting take. We're kind of seeing this old original filmmaking style clashing with what's popular and modern today.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Scorsese was, I read the interview, and Martin Scorsese was very kind about it, but he was critical that these aren't truly cinematic movies.
Yeah, I think that's pretty natural coming from a director like Scorsese. He's got quite the resume of films that he's done, but I don't think you can entirely discredit the MCU movies because of the fans that it has, but also if they're being made just because of the amount of attention they get, I don't think they have to rely on like originality. If that formula is working, like we mentioned earlier, they're gonna keep doing it.
Yeah,
there's nothing that's really gonna push the boundaries on that.
I think although he does make an excellent point, there is something to be said about these movies being an interconnected universe.
Mm-hmm.
This was based on one movie, like this kind of grew off the back of one movie, i.e. Iron Man.
Right.
And kind of going off of that formula, they built it off the back of this one movie and interconnected everything beautifully,
mm-hmm.
I may add, to make this strong universe. And I guess this weird balance is impressive in itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's not pushing a whole lot of emotional and psychological boundaries, as he says. But it is starting in recent movies. It is starting to push certain things. I don't want to go too deep into it, but it's covered like race in the past. It's covered like immigration and alienation in the past. Although lightly, not heavily, it's starting to. These are recent movies, and they're starting to push the boundary a little bit. But I think it's
he makes a good point. But again, I think even as viewers, you can separate what they're trying to accomplish. I think even the Marvel people know they're not trying to be this groundbreaking thing. They know that. The fans should know that.
Yeah, no, the Marvel actors go off and they make serious dramas after playing these colorful characters in Marvel movies. No, they understand.
Marvel movies are there to be fun.
They're not
a way to bring comic books to life and to get people more interested in that. And for that, they do a great job.
They're not pretending to be something they're not.
Exactly. Yeah. I would agree with that.
All right. Well, that's it for our show, guys. Thank you very much for listening. And, check out Ballroom Dancing at USC.
Check out Ballroom Dance. And next week, we're going to have a Halloween episode. So stay tuned for some spooky conversations. It'll be great. We're going to talk about some horror movies. So, yeah, we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.